TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Happy 10th anniversary, Seniors for Peace. Remember the huge demonstrations against the war in Iraq in 2003? Of those hundreds of thousands who came out for peace across the world, mostly films, photos, and very fond memories survive. But one group, maybe the most unlikely of all, the Seniors for Peace in Mill Valley, California, just kept going. For 10 years now, this year, 2013, every Friday at 4 p.m., rain or shine, they spend an hour at the intersection of Miller and Camino Alto with hand drums, guitar, harmonica and fiddle, and banners for peace. That in spite of the need of some to use a wheelchair or walker, since their average age is now 86 and many are in their 90s. And that's not all at all. Now they have 144 dues-paying members. They expanded their peace work into campaigns for Afghanistan, Haiti, and tsunami relief, and they address local wage and housing issues as well as global warming. Most recently, they voted to donate $100 off their dues to the Marin County District Attorney's Gun Buyback Program. You are about to hear my recording of their second ever rally in 2003. Many of those original members have found their personal peace during the last 10 years, and only their eloquent voices survive. But as Frieda Engel, now 93, told me, we have a wonderful crop of youngsters in their 80s who are taking our places. And Wally Mulvey, in 2013, is still leading the singing with his guitar. He says, I'm not that good, but I'm loud. So now I'm taking you back to 2003, into the sun-filled lobby of the Redwoods Retirement Community. That's where I first met Wally Mulvey.
You mean you want me to sing this thing for you?
That would be great.
Oh, I'm going to lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the riverside. I'm going to lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside and study ever no more. Okay, everyone.
As Wally sang, the growing group of seniors drew closer. Among them, the two women who had organized the demonstrations, Phyllis Hamilton and Nora Boscoff. I got to speak to Phyllis first.
We actually thought maybe 30 people, so we did 30 signs. Well, when almost 100 showed up last week, we were just overwhelmed because we didn't expect that kind of response.
Have you given it some thought why that is?
The people here had lived through several wars, and I think having lived all these years through past very tragic, sad experiences, they have maybe gained a perspective on it that younger people may not have.
What was your war experience?
I was working at the radio station KTRB in Modesto, California, when World War II was ongoing. And I remember when it came across the teletype, war ended that night, what excitement there was in this little town. People were just, oh, so joyous that the war was over. So, as I say, I think in my case, remembering all of that and the tragedy that had gone before and the friends who had lost people just has given me personally a whole different perspective on what's happening now.
I've been doing this since I'm 15 years old.
How many years ago is that?
I'm 84 years old now. And once I went to one of these things and my father said, why are you all dressed up? I said, well, I'm going out with my friends. He said, well, don't give them your name anyway. Because he knew I was going out to protest on union stuff when they weren't allowing unions, you know.
Where was that?
That was in New York at Orbach, but it was actually a department store called Orbach. And we got arrested because we weren't supposed to be there. So we were 24 hours in there at age 15. They kept us in jail.
How did they treat you?
Very bad. We were very young and very idealistic, you know. We have to go.
That was Nora Boscoff being whisked away in her wheelchair. I followed her out the door and caught up with a very dignified-looking gentleman. We walked together to join the demonstration.
What's in your life that makes you come out against the war here?
I was in the British Army in World War II, and I was in the desert campaigns in North Africa and into Italy, and I saw what war can do to civilians as well as military people. I also came to the United States because I admired the United States for its freedom, its lack of overt class distinction, and I came with my family. I became a citizen freely. And I love this country. At the same time, I feel that I'm entitled to speak out against what the administration is doing. What I see here is the erosion of freedoms, a slipping toward a horribly right-wing situation in this country, the database of high school children and such and so forth. I mean, the whole thing is anathema to me. I believe in freedom, but I'm frustrated and saddened by what is happening with this arrogant administration that we have right now.
We are on one of the busiest corners in Mill Valley. The commute traffic is now going home. The people who feel like they want peace or are at least very friendly toward us honk, and we have our drummers out, and we'll be singing protest songs when the drummers get tired. But the drummers seem to have a lot of energy and go on for a long time.
Even though they too are between 70 and 90 years old.
Oh yes, maybe 60 to 100 is a better range. Rose, you want to say something on the radio?
Oh, on the radio. I have another idea. Maybe we don't need George Bush anymore. I was going to make a sign that said, in a democracy, a loose cannon doesn't work. Impeach George Bush.
A loose cannon. That's a great slogan for us.
Yeah. What made you think that way?
I've been feeling that way for some time. It is not only the war, it's the attack on the environment and really on the common people of America. I think his time has come and should be gone. I think the real reason is oil, money, and I think he's hoping to get enough money out of that oil that he can pay for the war.
I was sending copies of our last one to my relatives in New York, and my daughter said, I'm really proud of you. She said, I'll be 90 in 2-3 months, so I'm walking, and there are people here who are not well, but they're saying, this is what we're fighting for, and we're on the brink, really, now, and that's sad.
You remember World War II?
Yes, I do. Of course I do. I was in Paris in World War II, and I was scared to death. I was only 12 or 13.
Who else would like to talk to me?
I don't think anybody would understand me. But we're very
just one sentence.
We're very intense in our feeling. We hope others do what we're doing. Maybe it can get to Mr. Bush.
I came to see what she was up to.
Are you family?
Yes, I'm her son. Yeah.
So what do you think?
I'm very proud of her. I'm very proud of her. And I'm proud of all the people at the Redwoods.
Do you have this in your past as mother and son going out for some issue, or is this your first?
We started with demonstrating against nuclear weapons in the 50s. And Vietnam in the 60s, civil rights. I remember being maybe 10 or 11 years old and walking by Woolworths in downtown Chicago, and the civil rights movement was picketing. And that was where we were on our way to, and my mother said, "We don't cross picket lines." It was a big moment in my life, something I always remember.
I'm here because I think that we need this peace. I think that the world needs it, and I see no reason to mess it up with any kind of war. Even in families, we don't need war. So,
have you come out for peace before?
No, never in my life.
No. So this is a big step.
Well, it is. My apartment's over there, and I could see them out here. So I thought, well, and I have 6 children, and all of them said, "Are you out there protesting?" We hope so.
Tell me why you're here.
Well, I'm here because I'm against the war. And I also just finished reading Secrets by Ellsberg, and he talks about all the lies that people in the government, from the president down, tell in order to carry out what they think is best for the people without discussing it with people. Then they try to give them information which is not legitimate. And Bush is so anxious to go to war that he doesn't really care under what pretense he goes to war. And I don't think that young people should be killed for that reason.
My name is Sylvia Siegel. I'm a consumer advocate of some years. This is the best demonstration for anti-war that I've seen. We can't have another war. We have too many gorgeous and intelligent sons, and we have to hang on to them. Make love, not war.
Right on, Sylvia!
I was a CPS in World War II, conscientious objector, so I've always been for peace.
Even so, that war, that took some guts to be that way then.
Yeah.
Were you in a camp?
Yes, yes.
Where?
Oh, we surveyed all over the southwest of the United States. I was in a survey group. We weren't released until the 46, the war was over.
What were your reasons? Were they religious or political or both?
Essentially, you know, I believed in Gandhi and Schweitzer and Kurogawa, you know, the Japanese peace activist. So they were the people I tried to emulate.
Did you count?
Well, I counted as well as I could. There's so many people here, you really can't get an accurate count. But a conservative figure that I got was 120. So let's figure by the time 5 o'clock comes around here, and that's another 40 minutes, we ought to have anywhere from 130 to 140, maybe 150 people here on this corner in Mill Valley in our little town, and we're making a statement.
And what do you think is the average age?
Last week, the oldest person here was 95. I think we've got some people that are older than that. You look around you and you can see 10 or 20, maybe as many as 30 people sitting here in their wheelchairs, standing here with their walkers, or trying to get around with their canes, and they're out here in the cold weather here in beautiful downtown Mill Valley, and we don't like what the hell is going on in the country with our leaders in Washington. We don't want a war. The country doesn't want a war. The world doesn't want a war, and we're going to do our very best to try and stop it.
That was Wally Mulvey again, his guitar slung over his shoulder. I decided to return to the Redwoods Retirement Center. By now, I was so intrigued by the wit, passion, compassion, and amazing depth of life experience that I hoped to find somebody to engage in a conversation. I got my recording equipment ready on a comfortable sofa and asked the first person who came by to check her mailbox to join me. Here is Kathleen Berge.
My life changed when I was in England during World War II with the American Red Cross, working with combat flyers. And as I watched the combat flyers, the American boys, fly over Germany, and many of them did not come back. They went down in the channel, and I watched the German planes go down. And then I was in the bombings in England, in the bomb shelters, and watched homes flattened, shops torn apart. And so the whole fiasco of war had no more glamour for me. So after the war, I went into Germany and worked with the newly liberated slave laborers that Hitler had kidnapped from other countries that he occupied. And amongst the slave laborers, I found these orphan children. I was with United Nations, and then I went back with the Quakers and lived in the camps and worked with the children. So I saw what war did, not only to cities, but also to families and to both sides, whether it was England and America or it was Poland, the occupied countries, and even Germany. And then I worked in Korea after the Korean War with North Korean widows that came down to fled during the war, and in Yugoslavia with Hungarian refugees after the Russians took over Hungary. So what really is agonizing right now is we're going to be doing this again. We're going to be going in to terrorize the Iraqi people, all of the countries around Iraq. Middle East is going to be shaken up. And I think that it's such so tragic that the brilliance of brain and the money has gone in to weaponry, diabolical ways of killing, and not in to peace. How can we make harmony and peace in the world? It's a tragic thing. And I think that under this administration, with the hawks in charge, we're going to be making more and more enemies. We're breeding hate. That's what we're really doing. And this whole business now of terrorists in our country and the high alert in our country is such a tragic thing, because it's coming out of our choice to do more violence through war making.
From your brief experience with the United Nations, what are your hopes and expectations for the role of the United Nations now?
Well, I think it's totally tragic. I came back from the wars in just when the United Nations was formed, and I went out to Muir Woods, where the delegation went in the great Cathedral Grove, and I thought, this is the end of all war. And I think the most tragic thing is that this country particularly has not in any way supported the United Nations. They have not paid their way. They have not supported the United Nations. And I think that's the tragedy, because unless there is a unity of countries coming together, then I think it's hopeless, really. And I think the role should be strengthened. I was privileged to be at the United Nations when Eleanor Roosevelt was there, and she founded the Work for Children. And I worked with them again. They were the umbrella in Yugoslavia when I worked in Yugoslavia, two Quakers, two of us, under the United Nations. But I think that that needs to be strengthened as a really living body.
That was Kathleen Berge, a participant in the weekly demonstrations against war in Iraq. When she left, I introduced myself to two women who sat across from me. Sarah Wasink told me her story.
I come from Holland, and we lived through 5 years of war. We were occupied by the Germans. We were bombed for 5 days by the Germans and for 5 years by our allies. And it doesn't matter who it is. Bombing is bombing. Of course, we were not treated so well by the Germans, but we really felt for them that they were totally demolished in the war. Of course, London and great parts of England were too, but what was the use? And I know that Hitler was very dangerous, but it's crazy to compare Saddam Hussein with Hitler. He has none of the power, and we would, if we make war, we would get the whole Arab world and all the Muslims against. I think it's a dreadful thing to think of. I often can't sleep. Like you think, what must their families feel? And once you've been in war, and especially when you have a baby, you feel, and the bombs fall all around you, boy, you feel helpless. We spent the first month of his life every night in the cellar. We had the German U-boat harbor quite near. And so there were the Allied bombs, and then there were the waves and waves of bombs going to Germany, coming over. And you heard that awful sound. We also heard the first, what was it, the V2 come over, the first missiles. It was like a diesel truck driving over your head. It was toward the end of the war. I cannot believe that any woman would be, if you know how much work it is and how much love it takes to raise a kid, would ever want war. To have them destroyed, not other people's kids, not your own kids, nobody. And I'm very glad that you will talk about it, because the radio reaches a lot of people.
How old were you when you had to spend time in air raid shelters?
I was 24, nearly 24 when the war started, and it was 5 years, so I was 28 when it ended, and we had one baby when I was 26, and it was then you really get scared. We had dug a shelter in the yard with an oak table over it that was supposed to be safe, but then of course it rained, and the hole that we had dug filled with water, so we went back to sitting under the stairway. But it's no way to live. And my husband, he worked at the only steel mill Holland had, and he was bombed regularly by the Allies, although they never delivered. They always sabotaged. They never delivered anything to the Germans they could use, but the underground didn't seem to pass it on. So they were often bombed, and then he was in open trenches, and he would come home with dirt in his hair, and he said, if the bombs fall right overhead, you know, you're safe because they'll go forward with the plane. But if they fall behind you, you're really scared. He was also a reserve officer, so he could be picked up at any time. In Belgium and France, they were all put in internment camps. All these 5 years, I never knew in the morning whether I would see him back. And really, in the night, I didn't either, because then some Dutch people would call, yell through the mail slot in the door, he has to go underground and disappear because the Germans are going to pick him up. They never did, but he had to go underground, and there was a curfew, so he could be shot every... He wasn't, he's lucky, but he became 86, which is pretty good, but it's no way to live. And we were lucky. I mean, our house wasn't bombed, wasn't destroyed. Think of what happened in Germany and in England. And the Allies often missed. The Germans would have something vital next to a hospital. So once the Allies, by accident, bombed a hospital in The Hague. And, you know, the patients were killed, the nurses, the ministers who visited, everyone was killed. And then if you know the families, then you see the devastation. It's a totally unfeminine thing, I think, a war. It's people who never grew up and still want to play in the street corner, cowboys and Indians or whatever. I cannot believe that any woman would be for war.
That was Sarah Wasing, who survived 5 years of bombing in Holland. As I tried to engage the very quiet woman who sat next to her, Sarah told me that she would not talk about her life. Why? Her friend, Sarah said, survived the worst bombing of any European city in World War II. Some say that the death toll in the Allied bombing of Dresden was double that of the city of Hiroshima. When the smoke cleared, the whole center of the city was pulverized, but the large white oil tanks owned by the British-controlled Shell Oil were left intact. The writer Kurt Vonnegut also survived the two-day bombardment. In his novel, Slaughterhouse-5, he tells the story of a soldier who was shell-shocked. He turned mute from the horror. Almost 60 years after her experience, Sarah's friend turned silent when asked about Dresden. Sarah told me that she is a very good artist. Her paintings are light and bright and full of color. And when she is done, she paints a thick coat of black over them, leaving just a small window of light. You heard a documentary about an extraordinary group of people. They chose Seniors for Peace as their name and come out every Friday with drums, guitars, and banners. Everybody whose voice you heard is older than 70. Some are in their 90s. They send a message to other seniors across the country to come out as well. The program you just heard was recorded 6 weeks before the beginning of the war on Iraq in March 2003. Many of the elders who were then in their 90s are no longer alive, but their spirit and the organization they founded is vibrant and has expanded its mission to international and local social justice issues and climate change. In early 2013, Seniors for Peace are celebrating their 10th anniversary. A beautiful documentary was made about them by David Brown. Find out more at their website, www.mvseniorsforpeace.org. MV stands for Mill Valley. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.